Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome to Fuse, a BOM podcast. In each episode, we bring together artists across disciplines to discuss their work and creative practice. We've been taking this approach since 1981, delivering the artist's voice. Here's how it works. We invite a distinguished voice in visual art, literature, film, music, or performance for a conversation with whomever they'd most like to speak with. No host, no moderator, no interruptions. Just two artists in conversation. For this episode, we asked performance artist Becca Blackwell who they'd most like to speak with.
When BOM asked me an artist to speak to, my immediate thought was Okwi, because I had seen her perform and I had never seen anyone of my peer group and artists that I was surrounded by who was going to such a magical, deep place that spoke to humanity and not, even though she was speaking for something very specific, she spoke past that specificity into something which I hope we all can get to one day.
Okwi Okpokwasili is a performer, choreographer, writer, and a genre-breaking figure in New York's experimental dance scene. Her productions include Bronx Gothic and Poor People's TV Room. In 2018, she received a MacArthur Fellowship. Becca Blackwell is a New York-based trans actor, performer, and writer. Their play, They, Themself, and Shmerm, has been presented across the country. They have collaborated with Youngjin Lee, Noah Baumbach, and Richard Maxwell, among others. Blackwell was the recipient of a 2015 Doris Duke Impact Award. The two performers discuss how they build relationships with their audiences, challenging gender norms, fighting fear with art making, and the power of body language in their work.
That's so beautiful. And that's the whole thing about decentering. It's like when I read Crime and Punishment, or I read Moby Dick, I don't need him to be a black man.
Right.
But he's speaking specifically from his place.
Yeah, the Brothers Karamazov.
Yes,
another one.
Right,
I was
right.
Like, why is this speaking
exactly.
to me?
That's right. That's
like,
right.
Yeah, I'm like, I think that's authenticity is what we're always seeking.
Right, right.
My name is Becca Blackwell. The preferred pronoun I use is they and them, but I still got she and he in me.
My name is Okwi Okpokwasili, and my preferred pronoun is she and her. Though when sometimes people look at me, they still say he.
Your energy to me is so, like, woman power.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think maybe we're going to get to a place soon where we do start to completely dismantle all of those gender space. And I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I know some people say maybe we should call everybody they, you know.
Yeah.
I have to contend with why it's so frustrating when people call me he. But I think that comes from a place of being a tall black woman who doesn't necessarily fall into the standard norms of beauty or femininity, and then the connection of black women in this country being outside of also the protection and the norms of femininity, because, you know, the legacy of slavery kept Black women in the space of sort of animal chattel, or in fact, they were, you know, occupied a, that vestibular space that where human beings were either, you know, became chattel, right? Because it was out of the wombs of Black women that you were destined to be a slave, right?
I think that's interesting, because when I, before I've allowed myself to transition, like, medically, I would yell at people to call me she, too, because part of me was like, no, she is expansive, and she can encompass many different kinds of bodies. There was a part of me that felt like if I transitioned, I'd be a bad feminist.
Mm.
So then I was always like, I can't do that, I can't do that. So right. I had to hold on to, like, she.
Right. Why can't that woman she space encompass
masculine way, bodies?
That's masculine bodies, right?
Yeah, with had vaginas or whatever.
Right.
I mean,
right. Because that is also this question when we when I look at particularly like kind of sort of femme, you know, people who were identified or biologically identified at birth as male, mm-hmm. but are definitely kind of more psychically and chemically and, you know,
consciously
female.
Yeah.
Sometimes I would be like, well, why is it that sometimes those representations of that femininity also ascribe to this very traditional femme body?
Yeah.
Like the hair, the boob, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
the walk, the sway.
Right, right. And so it's true that then there are the folks who are saying they, them, who refuse also that, who are doing there, you feel there are some people who have a hybridity.
Yeah.
Right. And so that, but it's true that sometimes, especially when I look at maybe popular figures who I'm so excited about and I love that they occupy that space, especially when we're talking, when I'm thinking of Black femme, Black transgender femme women and how they are murdered and in such, I mean, that's...
No, I know.
I mean...
Everything, I mean, as a person who's a Taoist, everything's connected.
Yes.
And if you're not seeing, you know, how everything is... Like, I'm connected to everything that's painful as much as I'm connected to all the thing that's wonderful. And I
right.
have to see. And I see, if I see it on the street, I know it lives in my body.
Mm-hmm. And right. And so that's why I see that and I want to celebrate them. And celebrate that spirit and celebrate a moment like their freedom and know that it comes at a cost. So I have to put aside my feelings like, why do you have to represent in this way that feels kind of regressively feminine?
Yeah.
You know,
my compassion opened up when I started to radically change my body. You know, like I used to feel very similar in that way. And I still do. I have to catch myself. You know, it's very complicated, and where you are in the world, that is kind of your viewpoint advantage of it,
right?
So I'm always having to like remind myself that I, you know, have a white body and it's masculine,
right?
And it's a rectangle, you know. And so when I'm walking down the street,
it's not a rectangle, actually.
You have I have curves. To the listener, I have curves. Yeah, like to me, that's something that I always have to remember. And then now I look like the guy, everyone's nightmare of a white guy, like kind of 8chan dude.
That's right.
Right? So then I'm like looking at
but
the...
But I know you, Becca.
Right. Everyone's like, I know. But it is, I was walking, I was at a queer club, lesbian night specifically. I think they still have those. And someone pushed me across the room and said, get out of here, white boy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was really interesting, all the thoughts that went through. So my first thought was, oh no, I'm my body's in... is making them feel uncomfortable. But I was like, but that was a really aggressive move, you know?
Right, to push you across
right.
the room.
And it felt emboldened with, I'm surrounded by queer people, so this white boy's got to get out of here, right? So then I was like, then I got angry. And then I turned around, I remember looking at her and being like, she's not even from New York. She's going to tell me again. I can tell by her clothes. It was like my... What then? It's like it's not even about radicalism.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
more about like what?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember this neighborhood when no one would even walk around here. You
right.
know, like now it's like hipster beyond hipster beyond hipster. You know, I mean that was just something really like I had to take in. And then I work out. You know, I train with dudes because I'm all jacked up on testosterone, and I'm working out with these guys, and it's a very mixed group of men. They're wonderful, But I said, I told them what happened. They said, yo, you did it. Yo, you did it. Like, you look like.
You passed.
Passed. And I just fucking was like, passed. Whoa, that's wild, yeah. You know?
But that's the whole thing. Like, I don't want to take on the position and I don't want to be like, my liberation entails the need to take on the position of the oppressor. Like, I don't want to just assume.
I know.
You know what I mean? I don't want to just like, okay, I've kicked you off the throne. Now I get to sit on the throne. We need to dismantle that whole fucking throne.
Well, I think
right?
That's a lot of, once you know, yeah. This is where you realize everyone is equal. It's like whoever's in the position of power, if you put yourself on that or think you're there, then you are putting people underneath you.
Right, right.
So what does equity deeply look like?
Right,
I think it's complicated, and it's not like, and I think we as humans want things to push up against. And we want a them.
Right, right.
I've just noticed a lot of white guys recently being like, this is so unfair. I feel like I'm being squeezed out. I feel like, and I'm like, no, you're learning how to share. And that's complicated because if you come up the world a certain way.
Well, you're learning you didn't possess it to begin with.
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? You didn't rightfully possess it. Right. Or this is, what is, you know.
An entitlement, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it feels to maybe then it feels unfair.
And at the squeezing out, it's just like, you're not being squeezed out. You're just not in the center.
Right. Well, that, yeah, right?
Right. It's like, I mean, maybe that's the thing about equity, right? A loss of center. Even though I have to say, when a white guy who looks a little bit, I mean, see, and I see you and I look at your eyes,
yeah,
and they have so much like pathos. And,
but
like,
that's when people know I'm
them.
Not a man. Ooh. Every time, every single
Damn.
Time. When people look into my eyes, both men and women look at me and go, wait, you're not a man.
Or you weren't biologically.
Right. Like, there's something about
you
them
weren't
that's
biologically
like, raised. I didn't get socialized as a man.
Right.
Because I look deep into people's eyes. And that's something that men have a really hard time with.
Fuck.
And when I look at men in my
that's
men
fucking deep,
eye to
y'all.
Eye, yo, they look at me kind of like, okay, you can stop looking at me like that, you know, because it's hard. Because we've taught men to be afraid of vulnerability.
Yeah.
When vulnerability is actually powerful and feminine, but that's not something we encourage for, you know, men assigned male at birth, people who were
assigned, yeah, that's right, assigned a particular gender,
AFAB,
yeah, male,
AMAB.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of
I love that
acronyms.
Sounds like bees and stuff, AMAB. You know what I mean? I feel like it's like a mother bee or something.
Totally, I love that idea. But I think in the downtown New York scene, I mean, I was technically an actor, but the world didn't know what to do with me as an actor, so I became more of a performance artist, and then my performance artist became activism. Through Jennifer Miller's Circus Amok, and also just my body weirdly freaking people out. And then, you know, obviously I had to write my own stuff. So then you become all these titles. Like, what do you...
Right, because Becca, I mean, I feel like I don't know that I know your performance
right.
work as much as I know the work that you've done with...
Other artists.
Young
yeah.
Jean Lee
yeah.
and Tina Satter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, even though you clearly are a singular presence... But I do feel
yeah.
like you're an actor.
Yeah, I collaborate. Well, yeah, those
and the Young Jean Lee was a collaboration piece, right?
Yeah,
because also that piece felt like, okay, you're a singular performer,
right?
In occupying this world, and you feel like, yeah, I see the thing about performance are, yeah, I think I feel like there are certain labels that are useful for people.
And grant writing.
and so sometimes I'll just allow people to use these labels.
Yeah.
And
is this going to get me the
without
money?
Agreeing, I don't agree or disagree, right? Because I just feel like, well, it's true. I am trying to make in my work these kinds of, you know, I'm pulling from multiple disciplines.
Yeah.
So it's all true.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because I do feel like the body is essential in my work.
Yeah.
And I am a mover.
Dancer. Yeah, for sure.
A dancer. But even sometimes I get uncomfortable with dance.
Right,
because I feel like then that seems to mean something to a lot of people, even though I think the dance world, you know, from from Judson Church
right,
to
yeah.
to even like Min Tanaka or Urban Bushwoman. But you know, I think people who have been doing dance practices have been, it's been super broad and flexible, mm-hmm. and they've been yeah. finding multiple vocabularies where I feel like there are so many vocabularies that have been engaged and then challenged and then engaged. It's just, I feel like it's, so I like to occupy that space because I feel like people keep interrogating yeah. what it means to dance, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes with theater, I feel that the language around theater and what makes theater can be so hard and conscripted mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. unmoving. But then obviously we do have, like, you know, the Worcester Group. We had, you know, Richard Foreman.
Totally.
And you do have Circus Amok, which
yeah.
is circus theater.
Yeah.
And then, you know, or what was it? The Wow, the women.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
Wow Cafe.
Of,
yeah.
Wow Cafe.
With Peggy Shaw. And,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you know, like Intozake Shange.
Oh, totally. And, yeah, yeah.
Anna Devere Smith.
Girls. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, those
so
are...
there's this whole... So you do feel like there also
totally,
was
to me,
this
that's
world
theater.
Around... yes. Yeah.
Like,
however,
that's funny, but not it's not traditional what we see. Like, it's not off-Broadway or Broadway to me. That's not theater. That's commercial. I see theater as like...
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I was ever
I wonder
not
if it
in.
Can all hold. If like, why can't it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To me, commercial is. I guess I should think about commercial theater as being about a practice, because I'm. I guess I was thinking about a particular practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm thinking
mm-hmm.
about in commercial theater, there is a certain relationship set up between the audience and the performer,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yes. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that I don't want to say that commercial theater isn't theater. I do want to, I just want to think about the particular strategies and practices
yeah.
within how commercial theater is made. So I don't
mm-hmm.
want to say no to that, but I wish that, you know, the stuff that we were doing downtown also is included in that. And the legacy of all of the folks, I mean, I think Robbie McCauley too. I mean, Karen
Marie
Finley.
Or Irene Fornes.
Irene Fornes.
I mean, even John Guare and like Edward Albee would talk about how she actually was probably the better playwright
wow.
than all of them.
But there was no, but they wouldn't make
but
space
she wasn't,
for her.
Yeah, but she, yeah, her work, again.
Or Susan Laurie Parks.
Susan,
her,
well,
yeah.
she's now, I feel like she's kind of the Arthur Miller of like.
Huh.
But she's got, and the Signature Theater does all of her work. Yeah,
I mean, so the it's Signature like, Theater was picking up some Adrian Kennedy.
Yeah, I mean,
like they did a whole. Did they do a whole season of Adrian? No, maybe not. But yeah, they did Funny House of a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Signature Theater is kind of picking up a lot of.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I it's like I always
would
think
you call that commercial theater.
Well, I always think the closer you get to the sun, you get a little further away from what the truth of what where it came from.
Well, that's interesting too, because even when I think, okay, well, who's really, are there really more parts for trans women?
I'm thinking
women
of like Pose.
Trans women of color
right
versus, right, versus white women of.
Or any, I think of any.
Trans.
Masculine.
Masculine men, women. Well, sorry. Trans. people who were by a lot, like who were assigned the gender of woman.
Right, yeah.
Who. Who actually identify as male
mm.
now, that you feel like there aren't, there are less parts, how, you know, for
yeah.
trans men, for white trans men.
Well, I don't even care about white trans men, I guess, because it's like, well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's not that I don't care. I think it's just that.
What do you consider? Do you even call yourself anything?
I don't. This
yeah.
is like.
Is that the schmerm?
Yeah, schmerm. I think
schmerm,
that
it's schmerm,
subscribes
not
to the same question before. Like, I have many in many disciplines that I connect to because it's like, how do I get what I'm trying to say across?
Yes.
The same way I'm like, I have a meat carcass, and how is it going to move in the world that I can get the most done without the most
right.
pain?
Okay, I might use men and women. I just want you to know because I just started into comedy and I'm not really good at rhythms yet. So to say like intersex, pansexual, non-binary, gender-conforming, it just kind of loses the joke. So just bear with me, PC police. I'm going to say men and women, but we all know it means many different things. Okay? Help me out. I haven't done the work. I'm a man now, so. Sorry.
Thank you.
Is that your Taoist, the meat carcass part? Because it's like, I so don't want to be a carcass, because I guess we have a legacy of having been carcasses.
And how about this earth tent? Is that better?
I don't know. It's still an inanimate object, and so I have these issues with that. But
sure.
I think that I'm just thinking about, like, this whole issue too for me is when I think about this the work that I do, when I think about kind of why I want to hold the kind of the multidisciplinary space, why I want to kind of always be slipping under and around these labels, like at the same time as I am located in them, is because I want that balance. I want that recognition of, like, you know, there's only so much talking you can do before it's time to sing.
Yeah.
Before your body is gonna have paroxysms and shudders
of
anguish, right? And so I've talked so much, but now this is what's happening to, now instead of verbally talking, instead of tongue talking, now my belly has to talk. Now, you know, that just sent something to my rib cage. And then now that just sent something to, now that's traveling through my feet. And once that's done, you know what I mean? Then there's some kind of energetic rippling in the room, and in the air there is some traveling back through my mouth, and the tongue can talk again. So I want to make the space for that whole sort of fabric. And it's so I do like that sense of balance or useful imbalance that brings you back, you know what I mean?
And I think artists are always trying to do that. I mean, that's what I mean the reason why I wanted to talk to you is because when I saw your work, that piece, Bronx Gothic, it spoke to me. And the same, like, it spoke to me as a human, as an artist.
Bronx Gothic is the solo piece that I did did center the kind of sexual awakening of this young girl growing up in the Bronx.
Oakley's job is to scare people, just to scare them to kind of wake up.
We have been acculturated to watching brown bodies in pain. I'm asking you to see the brown body. I'm gonna be falling, hitting a hardwood floor. And hopefully there is a flood of feeling for a brown body in pain.
You're occupying a space where violence and a kind of desire are entangled.
Bronx Gothic feels so deeply personal.
I felt like this little girl again. So love yourself as a brown girl.
Gotta do the work. There are questions of trauma, a sense of split and fragmentation, and there's really an attempt at remembering what the body is, what love is. But Bronx Gothic is also trying to do this. It's trying to do this in a way that is also very physical, right? Because the first half hour is just
the shaking.
The shake.
Well, that's what I was
going to... half an hour of a shake. I call it the quake. And it comes from me thinking about growing up in the Bronx and sexually precocious girls, but also thinking about how who we called a slut and who we didn't call a slut, and who and also witnessing a lot of sexual abuse in public.
Oh, I know,
and not knowing that it was that. Like, I was talking to people, because I just did Bronx Gothic 6 days a week for a month.
Holy
at the
shit.
Young Vic. Yes. And so I didn't know that I could do it. I said, or I knew I could do it, but, like, how would that happen?
Yeah.
And it happened, and I was really kind of, I was like, that happened. It won't happen again. But wow, that happened.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how when I was in grade school, I started to realize what sexual abuse might be, when sometimes, you know, there are always these little boys that would, as boys were getting older, they would dry hump girls in different parts of the school or in the playground, in the backyard.
Totally.
And there was one girl, I remember that she was, you know, they used to call her names. They called her ugly. She wasn't particularly considered attractive. She, you know, buck teeth and, like, and they used to really make fun of her. And I remember there was one day in the schoolyard, they were dry humping her against a fence. Mm-hmm. There were like about four or five of them taking turns doing this. And she was like screaming. And I remember, and we also went to, we went up to an adult because there were adults that were around. They were just like, you know, we went up and he was like, just whatever, leave me alone. I'm 5 minutes. You guys have to get online. And so completely the adult wasn't interested in what was happening to her. No one cared. And I thought, oh, they're not doing this because they like her, because I know that they don't like her. And sometimes you would see them doing it to girls and think, oh, it's because they like them.
Right, right.
You know, but I remember thinking, what does that mean that they're dry humping her against the fence? She's yelling. She's saying stop. They're not stopping. And I know they don't like her. This is a way that they're kind of showing her that they don't like her.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It was starting to, like, this idea of abuse, you know, and I must have been, again, like 10 or 11.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But I realized that we didn't have language for that then.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
feel like Bronx Gothic is also was also trying to disentangle this.
Yeah, and it's using the body and language to disentangle
to do it. Right. Can the body hold all of this and do it? Or we lost Toni Morrison, you know, Sunday. And The Bluest Eye is like, I hadn't even read The Bluest Eye then. I didn't know that. I feel like, why aren't people making young girls, young black girls in schools read The fucking Bluest Eye?
I mean, I know why The Caged Bird Sings was the first time I'd ever read someone about being someone being molested. And that was a huge influence for me. And I read that at 14. I remember sitting, and it was in detention, and I remember just sobbing because I was like, I've never had anyone. So it's funny because for me, feeling maybe a bit like an outlier, it's always been black artists that who've spoken for me in a way, or it felt like I'm about to cry. But but it's that kind of thing, like people who speak truth outside of the norm. And that, I think, that's where artists kind of are hopefully reaching out to each other, or to people who, like, you never know who's going to be the person that you're speaking to.
That's right. That's right. Or like this idea, even that pain, I'm not going to run away from pain.
No.
Right? And so
no,
that's
no,
the thing
no,
about
no.
also raising a child. I'm like, we have to be ready for pain, but also how does that pain become of some kind of use towards a kind of goodness?
Well, of course, because I mean, that's what's his name, Mr. Rogers always said, you can see the sadness of the tragedy, but you could also notice that people are running into danger to help.
I think my work is really not when I'm writing and thinking of the text language or the tongue language. You know, I'm not necessarily thinking so much about translating shit for people.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking that, oh, I'm writing for a white audience. I'm not thinking about that. But I am.
But, that's one of my questions.
But often I want to be like, you're looking at me, but I'm looking at you too.
Totally.
Right? And what is the kind of, what is that reverberation, you know, between this returned gaze?
Yeah.
Right? This kind of dual specularity. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be,
When you made Bronx Gothic, and was your husband very present in the process?
He was present. He was absolutely present.
With the writing and stuff?
The writing was pretty much just me. But the beautiful thing about Peter, the beautiful thing about my husband as a collaborator, for him, the more obscure, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as it has a kind of psychic and emotional energy,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't want to know exactly where you're going.
Nice.
Right? So sometimes I've been in a room and I know people, I feel like I hear people talk about legibility or just letting you know maybe the audience isn't with you here or there, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I think that's cool. And some people, like I said, they need to know where the audience is, and either to undermine or undergird whatever that belief the audience is holding is. But I feel like my husband is someone who really doesn't want to know where you're going. So it's kind of a nice person to work with.
Yeah.
Because.
So you don't feel, so you don't compromise anything.
That's right.
Yeah. So he's with him, he's more trying to.
It's like a sense. He has a sense. It's like, I want to.
And do when you tour, do you feel like you ever alter any of the work for the audiences that you're seeing?
Yeah, no.
Good. Yeah, that's good to hear.
That's a lot more work for me.
No, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, yeah. But it's so interesting, Becca. I have to say that when you talked about your experience in doing this kind of almost commercial theater piece, yeah. 8 days a week, and that it's for the producer, and it's true in a way as an actor,
yeah,
you're labor.
Well,
right?
Yeah, well, there's no value to actors because they're a dime a dozen. So no one, I mean, I think there's people on Broadway when you're good, you know, but those guys are having to do so much labor and work. I mean, and I've just really seen, I mean, did you see A Strange Loop? Michael Jackson musical. It's incredible.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's okay. But one of the lead performer, Larry Owens, what happened to his body watching him and knowing how much he was getting paid and knowing what kind he put his body through. And I was just like, no one values that, you know? And what you hope out of that as an actor is that you're going to get more work, right? As an actor.
Right.
You know, and not about anyone valuing your artist, or you're going to get on a TV show and you can get rich or whatever.
Right, right. And or not even get rich, just be able to pay,
pay
rent,
rent
for a couple.
And go on a vacation once.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in your work, do you feel, when you're doing your own solo work, are you addressing also, are you also looking at like performative, like the kind of the landscape of performance and who is valued and not valued?
I mean, a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think when I did my solo show out of a fact that I was having to teach audiences how to see my body, you know? So, I mean, I know you understand this. So it's like people are like, well, I don't know what to do with you. It's just what I heard from every agent up until trans became hot. And then they're like, it's like all my great black actors of the 90s where they were just like, really? I trained at the fucking Royal Shakespeare Academy. You're going to have me play what? You know, because there was only like, you know, white writers only could see three options because they had no idea of a community at all. And so that's how I felt. A lot of writing with trans, you're just like, what? Like, we don't walk around and talk like that, you know? But it's just like, oh, well, we're writing for the straight audiences to understand you. So that you can be introduced into the world, you know?
Right,
and
right.
You're just like, oh my God. But yeah, so that was kind of where They, Themselves, and Shmurm came from, which was just me being like, okay, well, let me just show the world a body that is they're just like scratching their head at and make fun of the fact that, you know, I've been walking around for 46 years. Here I am. I can't believe I figured it out. Thank God you guys are, you're just like... I had one agent say to me once, well, would you be willing to wear, this is before I took any testosterone, would you be willing to wear a wig or like a pantsuit? And I was like, what the fuck are you going to have me audition for, Hillary Clinton? This is like in 2011 or 12. And then she was just like, no, I want you to audition for like a lawyer on Law and Order. And I was like, well, she better go down and tell all the radical dykes and their like short hair that are lawyers right now. That they better put on a wig and some pantsuits to be taken serious as a lawyer. Because this is when you just realize that the way the entertainment or that world is like, again, it's what it goes back to the beginning of our conversation. Like, this is the world we were prescribed of. These are the ways that these bodies or these people are and how they exist. And you're constantly having have artists be like, no.
No, no. And I think it's like, I think for me, I guess part of my pieces too when I work is, I don't want to make it any easier for you to figure out where to put me.
Yeah.
I refuse to be put.
I mean, that's what Young Jean would do with the talkbacks all the time. She's like, what? You know, you see her, right? She'll be like, so what did you think when that part happened? And, you know, a lot of people are like, and then I thought, well, that's going to happen. She's like, great, great. We're going to change that. So that'll never happen. You know, and I think that's like, it took her a long time to get that kind of clout where she could do that, where her audiences would come there like, I mean, when we first did Untitled Feminist Show, I remember them, one of the guys is like, I thought you were going to use tampons at us. And I'm like, well, that's every guy's dream of what angry women are going to do.
Anne Liv Young does that anyway. Right.
Yeah. It's like Gigi Allen, you threw shit at you like in the 80s. Yeah, we're fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm, I am someone, and maybe this is why my husband and I are good partners, I still want the performance space. I want it to be a confounding space.
I think that's.
I don't want people to come in there with any sense of certainty about my body, about their bodies, about what happened.
Like, yeah.
I want them to kind of be like,
yeah.
You know, I think more of us need to go into spaces and come out a little bit uncertain and
I
be
agree.
Able to live and be okay with that uncertainty, right?
Seeing
and
something,
also not expect, it's like I go in here and now like it's like you go into a performance space and a meal has been prepared for you and they have labeled what everything is, exactly what's in it and what's going to happen to you when you eat it. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I've made something. I'm going to share it. I have no idea what's going to happen to you. And I don't, it's not half of the time, I don't know what's going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And then, and afterwards, you'll figure it out. You'll figure out how it resides in you. I'm like, I want to operate on the back of the mind.
Yeah.
I want to operate somewhere in the reptilian space. Just, I mean, sure, also in the intellectual space, in the cerebral, in the cerebellum, but I also want to really be, I want to occupy.
Being present.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's experiencing right now. I think there's a lot, I think a lot of helicopter parenting and stuff. I mean, we probably grew up at the same time where.
Oh, they just let you run
around.
Yeah,
run around. We didn't use car seats, you know. Like,
well, the playgrounds were just fucking concrete.
Right.
Now they're all padded with rubber, which as a parent, I kind of appreciate.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about being a parent. How did that change? Did that change the way you experience the world as an artist? Did that affect the kind of language and things you want to talk about?
I am that helicopter parent, by the way. I think. Even though I'm like, it's okay for her to get hurt.
Physically, like fall down.
Yeah, fall down, stuff like
Step
this.
Step up, baby, you're all right. That kind of.
Not from high distances, though. It's true. If I see her and she loves to climb, she is quite. Experimental and she's a freaking, you know, she's like I'm a secret spy, people don't know this about me, and she's like, now I've got to, you know, she has this idea too that she has to learn to do parkour if she's going to be a spy, because all spies know parkour, which I'm kind of like, no, actually that's not what all spies do, but you've watched a lot of action movies and that's what they do, right? In James Bond. But I as an artist, how is being, it's, oh, gosh,
because when we met, she was about two.
Yeah, I mean, I was making Bronx Gothic. Well, I was writing it while I was pregnant.
Yeah,
and so
I
think
that
there's a kind of urgency that also comes out. I'm just like, this is, you know, it's that present. I've always understood or hoped to try to find a sense of presence in performance.
Yeah.
But I think definitely with children, there's that thing of like, are you present or aren't you? Because they know when you're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
When
and
you're
so
just
maybe it does, it works
phoning
that
it
muscle.
In.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're like, yeah.
They know you're not listening. And or you're not there.
Mm-hmm. I love you.
Is made possible in part by the generous support of the Pannonia Foundation. This episode was recorded at Brooklyn Podcasting Studio. Fuse is produced by Libby Flores, Director of Audience Development and Digital Production at BOM. It is co-produced and edited by Mira Al-Rahim and Sophie Cazes, with production assistance by Ethan Primison. I'm Chantal McStay, Associate Editor at BOM Magazine. Our theme music is Black Origami by Jalen. Additional music by Ray Swen. Be sure to subscribe to Fuse wherever you listen.